I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I come to you today at a loss for the horrors that afflicted our country once again this past weekend with the attacks in Dayton, Ohio, and in El Paso, Texas. It's almost beyond comprehension, I think, for all of us as we start to see these events. They're not going away. These active shooter events are not going away. They are becoming more and more prevalent. And the randomness of it is starting to, I think, get to people's consciousness, is that it can be anywhere, it can be any time. I don't know about you, but I go anywhere, and I always look around. I want to see what's going on. I want to see where my exits are. I'm not paranoid, but I know these things happen, you know. And this past weekend, to see this go on in Dayton, Ohio, at a fun area of the town where people are out having cocktails, walking around, enjoying themselves, and to have this individual pop up and just indiscriminately start shooting and killing people is, once again, shocking and mystifying. Now, I got to say a great big shout out to the Dayton police, who are in the area specifically for security purposes. That's why they're assigned down there. It's a very popular area, so they have a lot of cops down there. And by all reports, the cops engaged, shot, and eliminated this shooter within a minute. But he still managed to kill 9 people and injure another 20-something people that many of them, I understand, are fighting for their life as we go to air. This is horrific. Down in El Paso, people simply shopping for back-to-school goods. You know, apparently it was packed. The Walmart was packed. 3,000 people, 500 employees. The mall area was packed. And this guy pops up and just starts shooting. In his case, though, he is part of the 1% that either flees or surrenders. And he decided not to die, and he surrendered. And I want to say a shout out to the El Paso police, who, regardless how we all may feel emotionally that we wish they would have eliminated this individual, the fact that they captured him is actually a benefit to all of us, because they will get to interview him. They will get to look and see if they can glean anything from his motives, his tactics, the things that he did to help us identify the next one. Because without a doubt, there will be a next one. So up on the platform, AmericaOutLoud.com, you'll see an article I wrote, Rampage of Death, Active Shooter and the Innocent. I actually started that article last week, and I started thinking about it because, as you know, I have a company, True Security Design, and that's what we do. We go and we help people protect themselves from attack, how to respond. That's what we do, all right? We have a conversation all the time in our office. It's a shame we have to have this company, but this company is absolutely necessary, and I'm glad that we can help, but it's a terrible fact of life that we have to have this company. I would much rather sell balloons and trumpets and whatnot than have to tell people how to run from a crazed gunman who's trying to kill them or kill their children. But such is the world we're in, and such is the position that I find myself in, and I'm blessed to have the ability to teach people and to pass on my knowledge. So when I was looking at this and I wrote this article, the thing that comes up immediately whenever there's one of these incidents is people start screaming, gun control, gun control, gun control, gun control. And I understand the emotional response to that. I do. Because let's say these people that were killed with guns, if there were no guns, those people probably wouldn't have been killed. Isn't that correct? I think it's probably true. So the reality is here is that if we think of these things in a rational way, if we think of them calmly, if we think of them with the due respect that they deserve, and we can pull these different things apart, we can make a decision on whether or not the most appropriate thing we could do as a country would be to ban all guns, because that's the immediate response of especially people on the left. their immediate knee-jerk reaction is, well, ban all the guns and then we wouldn't have this. So I had to start thinking about it, because there's two different ways we respond to these things, to these kind of shootings. You know, as a professional who deals in this, I am still emotionally affected when I see it. I'm still emotionally affected when I see the victims, when I recognize the pain that that entire community is going to go through now, both of them, all of them that have been through this. They're still suffering, whether it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or yesterday. These people are going to suffer for a long time because of the traumatic effect of being involved in the shooter, losing someone, knowing someone who was lost, or just having your community attacked. But the reality is we either look at it, we look at it rationally or we look at it emotionally. And it doesn't mean either one is wrong, and it doesn't mean either one is right. It means we have to be calm. We have to think about this. So, unfortunately, there's another aspect to this. The aspect that is the most disturbing, I think, of all, is the political aspect. Because there is a group of people in our country whose goal is to disarm the citizenry for a whole host of reasons. But one of them might be this thought that, well, if we disarmed everyone, then no one would be shot and killed, and we would save how many people? Okay? Let's look at this reality-wise. In China, there are many, many, many multiple deaths through knife attack. People run up to people on train stops and start stabbing away, killing lots of people. There was a guy who went to a school and killed a whole bunch of kindergarten children with a knife because they don't have access to guns. The bottom line is this: evil will find a way to commit its act. And if someone is of a mind to attack and kill people indiscriminately, they will find a way to do it. They'll do it with a knife, they'll do it with a bomb, they'll do it in some other way. So we have to look and say, and this is the hard part, this is why one of the reasons we can't talk about this, we cannot bring this topic up, because it's usually brought up in the heat of a terrifically horrible incident like we've had in Dayton and in El Paso. And anything that you say is going to be taken out of context and twisted around, and you don't understand, or you're a hater, or some other nonsense. And the fact that we cannot talk about these things is part of the problem. So I end my shows by saying, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. So how do we be a part of the solution? By calming down, taking a deep breath, and let's think about this. Because the next incident, whether we like it or not, is only days or moments away. We need to prepare ourselves. And the best way we can prepare is to look at each incident and glean the information we can. That's why, you know, this guy in El Paso that gave up, it's good that the cops got him and they can maybe learn something that could save people the next time. All right. So when we look at this emotionally, we can say one attack is beyond measure. Innocent lives are lost, people are destroyed, and therefore we should just get rid of all the guns. When there are 10 attacks, it's even easier to say that emotionally. When there are 20 attacks, you see what I'm saying? It goes on and on and on. The problem is this. There are between 20 and 30 of these kind of mass shooting attacks every year in our country. The numbers have gone up slowly over the years, but it's going up. So I would assume that in the next 10 years, there'll be 40 attacks a year. Now, those are lots and lots of innocent lives that are going to be lost. But is taking everyone's guns, all 350 million people here who have a right to own weapons, and changing the Constitution, removing a foundational constitutional right from an American citizen to keep and bear arms, to protect themselves, to throw off an oppressive government, and all the other reasons that we have the Second Amendment, is that the right answer for 20 to 30 incidents? Now, that sounds cold. That sounds callous. That sounds absolutely terrible. But I'm talking in the light of day, in the calm light of day. Because of 30 incidents, do we change our entire country's tradition and history? Now, the reality is that people don't talk about the up to 500,000 incidents per year where legal gun owners protect themselves and their families because they have a weapon. Now, that's not 20 or 30 incidents. That's about 500,000 incidents where people protect themselves. Doesn't mean they kill the bad guy every time, but they used a weapon to protect themselves. So we should tell those 500,000 people that they can now protect themselves with a baseball bat or a knife. They can't protect themselves with their gun because of 30, albeit horrific and horrible and painful incidents. Do you see what I mean? When you deal with things logically, when you deal with things clearly, it's very hard to have the conversation. Because immediately, I could see people jumping up right now listening to this show. You know, not the right-minded conservative kind of people. You know, the other guys and girls that I know listen. Some of them are my family members. That are jumping up and down going, oh yeah, well if it was your kid that got killed, you'd want to get rid of them guns too. Listen, I have family. I have children. I have parents. I am out in the world myself all the time. I don't want anyone to be in a position where they get killed because of an active shooter. And to say emotionally, should we just take away all the guns and that would solve it? That's something that's the easy nonsense answer. It doesn't solve the problem. It really doesn't. And we can pretend that it does. And that's unfortunately, that's part of our world because we have to live in a world of pretend. When I saw Beto O'Rourke, the politician from down in Texas, I saw him come on the air immediately. And I saw a man who was seriously moved by the incidents that took place in his hometown of El Paso. I saw him display emotion, but to the weak side. I saw him immediately attack President Trump, not by name, but what he said was, and for the politicians who, you know, divide and hate people for all different reasons, this is the result. I've about had enough of that now myself. You know what? There were shootings during the time of Barack Obama, and they were left-wing nuts who were shooting and killing people. Did we jump up and say, it's because of Barack Obama? No. This is intellectually weak, just like I saw Beto, and he was weak, and he attacked President Trump for no reason, because it bought him some political points, because he's in a presidential race that he's losing very badly, and he's trying to make up some time. I found that to be disgusting. He was using the dead bodies of these victims to make a political point. And anybody that does that, I just can't even understand it. I am disgusted by it. And when I saw him jump out there, he was the first one that I saw. And I was disgusted by it. I tweeted about it. And then I'm hearing in the wake of this second event, all of the Democrat candidates coming out, all of the Democrat politicians coming out, blaming Trump one after the other. It's his rhetoric, it's his hate, his reason to decide. Because the President of the United States wants to secure our borders from people who are coming here illegal, that doesn't mean that he's in favor of white nationalism and racism and all this other nonsense. There's no pushback on this, and it's wrong. It messes up the ability to talk about this. Because immediately, if you don't say, well, Trump is bad for what he did, then you must be a white nationalist. You must hate other people. You're a hater, hater, hater. And that ends the conversation. Without conversation, to really get to the root of this, a couple things are going to happen. Number one, we're going to keep fighting about this nonsense. We're going to keep going round and round in a circle about this nonsense. And the next time, we're going to be saying the exact same thing when there's people laying dead in the street or in a school or in a movie theater or in a mall. Because we didn't do anything about it. What can we do? Now, it would be really inappropriate to complain about something without offering some types of solutions. You know, not the fake solutions, like let's grab everybody's guns. Let's stay there for a second. Even if we all agreed, or most of us agreed, 51%, you know what? We're going to get rid of all the guns. How exactly are we going to do that? Are we going to put out a call and say, listen, law now says you can't have privately owned guns, so turn them in. You know what? A lot of people will. A lot of people will turn them in. A lot of people will not. So then what do we do then for the people that don't? Do we run the registry and see who owns guns and we knock at their door and say, hey, listen, maybe you didn't get the memo, but guns are illegal, so you could turn them over now, right? Some people might give up their weapons. Some people might not, right? I have to look at this in another way. And I'm sorry I'm bouncing around a little here, but there's a lot to this. We see these incidents of active shooters 20 or 30 a year. We see about 100 people killed on average in these active shooter incidents. That's 100 innocent lives that they're gone from their families, their lives are taken from them, all different ages. It's so painful, it's unbelievable. But how many people are killed in Chicago every year, every weekend? How many innocent people in that city are killed every weekend? How many innocent people are killed in Baltimore every weekend? Or you name any of the big cities across our country. How many innocent people are killed every weekend? Do we say anything about that? I know it's over 100 because there's over 100 in Baltimore alone. Chicago, hundreds. All across this country, thousands of people killed with criminal activity, street criminal activity. But yet we don't hear anyone jumping up and down saying, listen, those are innocent people in those communities that are getting killed. Let's send the police in. Let's do some random car stops. Let's stop people on the street and let's get the guns off of them. Because guns are the worst thing in the world. So why don't we go get the guns? Well, the reason we don't get the guns is because that's where politics sticks its head in. Oh, whoa. Wait a minute. Depends on who you're going to go after. And I'm not talking about a race. I'm not talking about a religion. I'm not talking about anything. I'm saying the reality is that politics now sticks its head in. Hundreds of people are killed on a regular basis in our country through criminal activity. And we really don't do anything about that. Oh, we give it, you know, we give it lip service and we talk about it and we complain and we yell and holler. But it kind of goes away. We're not demanding that the president get into Chicago with the DOJ and save those people. They're American citizens. We don't demand it of Baltimore. Why don't we? And this is what I'm trying to say. We have to put this into perspective. The idea of taking everyone's guns because of the actions of 20 or 30 people is disproportionate. And it doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't help the 500,000 people who use their weapons to protect themselves. All you've done now is made them victims. See, there's a lot more to this, my friends, than simply knee-jerk reaction, go after guns. And we know go after guns has been a political agenda for many, many years before there were shootings. You know, disarming the American people has been a goal of a particular group among us. I won't say who. But we all know who they are. They have pushed for gun control by removing guns from honest, law-abiding citizens, but they're against going after getting the guns from the criminals in the street who have them. No, that we can't do. But we can go to your house and take your guns. And I don't want to turn this into a gun debate, because it's not a gun debate. None of this is a gun debate. What this is a problem of human weakness, mental illness, and we need to get our hands wrapped around that. Well, I'll be back in a minute and we'll talk about this a little bit more.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, my friends, welcome back to Chasing Justice. You know, I want to tell you before you hear anything, you might hear in the background, we do a dog rescue here at the Pangaro House. And you might hear some dogs in the background because my beautiful dog, Arthur, who's a rescue, has a friend this week. He's got Charlie here with him. Charlie is a beautiful rescue who's looking for a home, and we're bringing him in. The two of them are barkers when they're together. So I apologize in advance if you start to hear any noise, but these fellas get excited when they, see the mailman, see a car, see anything. So we're going to get back a little bit. This is about, you know, these horrific shooting things that are going on and the responses of some people. You know, I was telling you how upset I got being involved with teaching people how to be safe and helping people stay safe. I see that schools are on board to a large extent. Schools are on board. Let me put it that way. Not all schools, not every school. And I don't know if your child's district is on board. You know, we suffer from a couple of things in this country You know, unless it's an incident that's taking place in our child's school, unless it's our workplace, our movie theater, or our community that is affected by one of these shootings, I think we all watch it. We see the pain on the people's faces. We feel a collective horror at what happens. We say our prayers, you know, prayer for Daytona, pray for Parkland, pray for Columbine, all these places. We send our prayers and our good thoughts. And then we kind of go back to our lives because it didn't happen to us. You know, and that is kind of part of the problem of why we all are not really getting on board here and realizing this is not something that we can just walk away from. Now, a lot of you may or may not know that I do a TV show on the Disrupt Ed TV network. That's disrupt-edtv.com. Disrupt Ed is a network that's made up of school personnel, administrators, teachers, everybody that's involved with running of schools. And they do all kinds of programs on educating your children and what's the best way to teach and tips for teach. It's really a wonderful station, disruptedtv.com. And the owners reached out to me a while ago and said, listen, the thing missing from our station is school safety and security. So they know that I do this. They know my company, True Security Design, does this. And they said, would you do a show? So I said, sure, I will do a show on school safety and security tips and how to prevent violence and how to respond to violence and things to look. I said, of course I would. It's an opportunity for me to help. So I had to think of a name for a show. And I went through, you know, oh, the school safety show, the school safety and security show. And then I realized the biggest problem out there that I'm seeing is people have a tendency to say, well, it is bad, it is horrible, but it'll never happen here. You know, because we have a nice community. We have a very connected community. We have a wonderful community. It'll never happen here. And as you've heard me say here on Chasing Justice many times, doesn't matter how nice your community is, doesn't matter how together your community is, how connected everyone is, this can happen anywhere to anyone at any time. So when people say it'll never happen here, that is the most dangerous thing people can say. So I thought of a name for my show, and I realized hope is not a tactic. It's probably the best name I could use because a lot of people rely on hope. They hope nothing happens. They hope that there won't be a shooter. They hope no one is that upset in their community. They hope no one will attack their school or their workplace or their movie theater. You know, so hope is not a tactic, is really the buzzwords that I want people to think about. Hope is not a tactic. We have to be prepared. These things are not going to go away. You know, they're not going to go away for the foreseeable future. They are a phenomenon that is with us now. And we're going to have to be ready for this. And this is what I've been preaching and trying to talk about for so long. So when I see the politicians come running out here, and it really bothered me. And I think in segment one, I think you heard that in my voice. You know, we went to the break. I had to sit here and collect myself for a second. It is disgusting and horrifying that these politicians would use the blood of these innocent people to push their agenda or to blame or try and gain political points on their opponent by using this. This is no more Trump's fault than it is Barack Obama's fault, than it was Bill Clinton's fault or George Bush's fault. It's none of their fault. It's nothing that any of them said makes these people do this. Now, they're going to try and twist and contort all of this, but how many of these mass killers over the years have we seen that have been on the left, who have left manifestos that said people on the left are who what motivated to do them? And we just seem to gloss over that. But here, because this one incident, we happen to have this guy in El Paso, looks like he put out this this manifesto where he has a problem with illegal immigration. Immediately, there's the in. There's all the in for the haters on the left who want to jump in and say, see, Trump made this guy do this because of that. Now, because the president wants to keep our borders secure, like millions of other Americans want to do, because we see the reason in that, that does not mean because this nut decided to kill people, it's because of something that was said. You know, that's like saying, well, you know what? You guys are always talking about this whole democracy thing. You're always talking about, you know, these rights things. You know, that can make people crazy and they'll go out and kill people. You really ought to stop. You know, if we were all socialists, we would have utopia. Now, of course, I'm being facetious about that, but this is the point I'm trying to make. Using this tragedy, any of these tragedies, to make political points should disqualify you immediately from the arena of ideas. Isn't that what we should all be doing? Isn't that what every one of us should be doing, is coming up with a better way to do something and then tell everybody about it? Let everybody think about it when they go, what? You know what, Joe? That is a better way to bake a cake. We're going to do it your way. Right? Wouldn't that be the better way to do things? Then going, I want to bake a cake, but you know what? That cake baker over there, he hates people, so don't make it his way. How does that help us move the cake baking world forward? It doesn't. And just like these politicians jumping up, you know, screaming and hollering that, oh, here's the reason that he did this. It's not the reason. These people have twisted thoughts. They have lots and lots of problems. And the thing that we don't confront, that we need to confront as a nation, is we need to understand, how does the mental health component feed into this? If somebody has extremist views, I don't care if they're left-wing extremist views or right-wing extremist views, somebody with extremist views has been polluted along the way by something. You know, most of us function somewhere in the middle. You know, some of us lean a little to the right, some of us lean a little to the left. You know, we go back and forth, and sometimes or other, we're in the middle somewhere on most things. You know, we believe a little this, a little of that, and we live our lives. When somebody is an extremist to one side or the other, they are dangerous, right? And to blame a right-wing nut on conservatism or Donald Trump or those people who believe in individual rights is ridiculous, as it is to blame someone who's a democratic socialist on the bombers who bomb things because they're against the American form of capitalism, or the Antifa, who they seem to think are perfectly legitimate and right, who go around hitting people in the head with baseball bats and causing trouble. Do I think it's the Democrats' fault? No, I don't. Do I think they encourage them? I do. And I think they encourage them because they come out and say they encourage them, that their ideas are legitimate. But I don't see anybody supporting people who are shooting up schools or shooting up businesses. I don't see anybody on the right saying, well, you know, I guess he had a pretty good grievance, you know, to go after that Walmart. But, you know, because there's illegal aliens in there, and because, you know, we're against that, we're okay with them shooting the place up. Do you realize how disgusting that is? And if you're thinking that, if that's what you really think, I'm going to make a suggestion for you, because I love you. You're an American citizen. You're my brother or my sister. Immediately go to the phone book and look up psychiatrist. Make yourself an appointment and go get some help. Because anybody that thinks like that is having a problem. Just as bad as these shooters who wake up in the morning and their hatred builds up in them for whatever reason. They say, you know what, now I have to go out and strike out and I'm going to go do this. Those people need help. See, it's a mental health issue, I think, to a large extent. Vile hatred of anyone or any group is a mental health problem. You know, there's been lots of people I disliked. Some people I could care less for. Some people I didn't like. Other people just rubbed me the wrong way. And other people I really didn't like being in their company. I didn't hate anybody. I don't hate anybody. To really get to the point where you hate somebody, think about how much of your personal energy you have to invest in that kind of hatred. That's not normal, ladies and gentlemen. That's somebody with some kind of a problem. There's some other thing going on there. And that is my bigger point. So if you read the article on the AmericaOutloud.com website, you'll see what I'm trying to get to. The point there is that if taking everybody's guns was a good idea, I'd be in favor of it. It's not a good idea. It doesn't solve the problem. What has potential to help us in these instances going forward is understanding the mental health component of these people. See, right now, our laws and everything in our system is geared towards a time of life that doesn't exist anymore. You know, the genie is out of the bottle with these shootings. We're not going back to a time of innocence where this didn't happen. So our laws, especially of things like making a threat, you know, somebody makes a threat, you can tell the police, well, what did they do? Did they do anything? No, they didn't do anything physically. They said some nasty things. Well, that's kind of harassment if they said that. You could sign a complaint. Who wants to get involved in that, right? nobody wants to sign a complaint, and you got to go to court. You know, the cops, they got more better things to do than, you know, somebody who made a harassing statement to you. But we need a paradigm shift in how we look at this, in the mental health of this. And this opens up a whole nother can of worms, right? If somebody says something that is threatening, somebody talks about hating an entire group of people and wanting to strike out and get them, or now is the time for us to, kill these conservatives. You know, kind of a lot like the people we see that go after people with MAGA hats and Trump hats. Do we not see that as a problem? Do any of my friends that are listening in that are on the left, do you see that as a problem? Or do you kind of agree with that because you hate Trump so much? See what I'm saying? Pick up that phone book, look up psychiatrist, and go see what's wrong with you. I didn't care for President Obama's policies, right? He seemed like a nice enough guy. He seemed like a great father, right? He didn't seem like a bad guy. But his policies, I found horrific. I didn't want anything to do with them, all right? So because my family and friends liked Obama, I didn't hate them. I didn't wish them ill. I wouldn't knock an Obama hat off of somebody's head and lose my mind. But people that see these Trump hats, these MAGA hats, they sure do that, don't they? See, this is a mental health issue. You know, it's almost, in the world of us right-minded conservatives, it's, and I don't mean this like it's funny, haha. I mean, it's funny, strange, that we see all this violence directed at people with a Trump hat, a teenage boy with a Trump hat. People lose their minds. They're pulling them off of people's heads in restaurants. They're throwing food at people. They're throwing them out of restaurants. You don't see that as a mental illness kind of a thing? There's a problem going on there that you hate somebody that much that you're going to go to that extent. And this is part of where we need to go. So the new paradigm we need to look at is when someone makes a threat, whether it be a written threat, a verbal threat, a threat on social media, a threat in a writing or a drawing. A lot of kids do writings and drawings that are very disturbing, and some of them are calling out for help. Some of them are saying the violence they intend. Others are just writing dark stuff because they're young kids and they're starting to be exposed to the pains of the world, and they write some dark stuff and they're not dangerous. But when we get a threat like that, right now, we can look at it, but if the person didn't actually do anything, there's nothing we can do about it. You know, we can make a report, the police can go talk to them, and that's pretty much it. And then 2 weeks later, they show up at your school or your place where you work and they shoot 27 people. And everybody goes, well, we knew about that guy, but he didn't do anything yet. So the paradigm shift that I'm calling for is we need to find a way to identify people who are potentially violent through their actions, through their words, through the things that they're saying that are so far, right or left, extremist, that we need to take a look at them a little closer. We need to have them screened by mental health personnel. Now, here's where the problem comes in, because I am not a big government kind of guy that says you should go grab people off the street because you think they're off their rocker. But at the same time, if somebody's making threats of violence, we now need to see it through a different prism. We now need to see that there's enough examples of people who have gone off and hurt and shot and killed people that when somebody makes their presence known, through some kind of a threat, some kind of a message, some kind of a writing, we have to have some mechanism to make sure that we find out what they're all about, okay? We make sure that they are mentally stable enough to be among us, right? Or they get the help that they need to diffuse whatever it is that's causing such a difficulty that they come out and hurt people. That's what we need to do. So how do we do that? Well, we could write a law that says if you make a threat of violence, the police can come and forcibly arrest you and take you to the hospital and make you go in that hospital. Well, that creates another set of concerns on its own, doesn't it? Because like I say all the time, it depends on who's wielding the law. You know, if you got good guys and good girls in charge of the government and they're wielding the law appropriately, then there's really nothing to worry about. The problem is, what happens when we have a bad guy or a bad girl in charge of the law and they decide they really don't like them MAGA hat wearing people? They think them Trump supporters are all sick haters and we got to get them off the street. And they use that law to go grab people. Now, of course, I'm weaving those two things together. But you see what I'm saying? You get the point I'm making here is that we have to have some mechanism to take a good look at these people, as opposed to just saying, well, Did you make a threat? No, I didn't mean anything by it. Get off my property. And you have to leave. You know, we have to make sure that these people that make these threats are vetted out properly and that they get the help they need. Now, I know there's no sympathy for these shooters. And once they've actually shot and killed people, it's very hard to have sympathy. That sympathy is for religious personnel and for God to have. The rest of us are going to be really angry and upset by what they did. But if we could prevent a kid from killing his classmates before he does it, if we could intervene, wouldn't it be worthwhile saving that kid's life too before he commits the violence? Isn't that the compassionate, humane thing to do? That kid's having some kind of problem. We intervene, we identify him, we get him checked out, we find out what's wrong, and then we move him along through the system of mental health care so that he doesn't attack his fellow students, or he doesn't go and attack people at the workplace, or she doesn't show up at the movie theater and kill 10 people. Wouldn't that be the better thing to do? This is where we need to pivot. The problem is, of course, politics will always jump up. And politics will immediately jump up when it depends on who you want to screen and why you want to screen them. And then are you screening them for a negative reason? Are you screening them just to call them a name? And I think that's inherently problematic in our system when we have people that use the system for political gain. And we're seeing that with our politicians that are coming out right now. Right this very minute, go on TV and you'll see some of them screaming up and down. It's Trump's fault. It's this fault. It's conservatives' fault. It's people who believe in democracy's fault that these shooters do what they do. And it's not that. It's mental health issues. It is human weakness. It is mental frailty. These are the things that lead to these horrific, horrific events that we all witness more and more on a regular basis. So that's the rub that I see here. That's what I see we need to do. I'm hoping to try and develop that. I'm willing to write this out and work with people. You know, I write a lot of articles, and I'm trying to write out how I think it should go and get it to the right people. So if there's any politicians listening, and I know you are, and if there are any other people who are in any position, mental health positions, I would love to hear from you. You can follow me on Twitter at Pangaro Global, at Pangaro Global, at Pangaro Global. Go there right now while we're talking, while you're listening, and you know, follow me. I'll follow you back, and we can have a conversation. If you want to email me, it's the letter J and then my last name, Pangaro, P-A-N-G-A-R-O, jpangaro at americaoutloud.com. So I'd like to hear your ideas. I'd like to hear who you're connected to that maybe will be willing to listen or work on this project, because I want to save lives. That is what I have dedicated this entire portion of my life to. You know, I've had a career in law enforcement. I was a school safety director. Now I have a private business to go out and do these things. But the bottom line about all that is that I'm in a position now to try and help to make a difference. And that's what I'm trying to do. So if you have something out there you think can help, reach out to me. And we'll be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company Healthy Cell will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of americaoutloud.com.
Okay, welcome back to Chasing Justice here, round 3 on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Hey, listen, a couple things I just wanted to tell you about. There's a company out there that has decided to sponsor this show. And I'm glad they do, because I've worked with them for a long time, and you need to know about their product. It's obviously a safety and security product. I only tell you about products that I believe in. Otherwise, I wouldn't talk about them because I have to sleep at night. I'm not here to sell you things just because somebody wants to put it on a show. I've turned away lots and lots of products that I found don't work and I would not want to be associated with. All right, but School Safety Solutions, right? Remember that name, School Safety Solutions. Go look them up. They make lots of different products for classroom security. And probably one of the best is a thing called Hideaway Helper. Now, you have heard me talk about in the past, one of the important things during a lockdown of a school is that the door has to be locked quickly. The teacher has to be able to cover the door, the window in the door, so that people can't see in. Because we know in lots of instances when they couldn't see in, even if the door was unlocked, they went past it. It's just the reality of the active shooter incidents. So School Safety Solutions makes an excellent product called the Hideaway Helper. It's inexpensive. It's custom sized to the door. You don't have to drill holes in the door. It's got a sticky pad at one end that you hook up above the window. It rolls up so that it's out of the way during the day, so people can see in. Everybody can see what's going on in the classroom. But in an emergency, the teacher simply pops a button, and that material drops down and covers that window beautifully. It's weighted at the bottom so that it goes all the way down and it stays in place and covers the window completely. It's excellent. The Hideaway Helper, and I'm telling you, School Safety Solutions. Go look them up. Excellent company. I really like them. All right. So I wanted to get that out there. As we're going forward here, I'm trying to think of, you know, we look at the concert in Las Vegas where people were hurt, and I get calls all the time from school districts and from outside venue places and sporting people. They want to know, hey, what can we do? You know, we're concerned that there could be a problem at one of our events, or, you know, what can we do? Well, there is a lot of things that you can do. I have an article that I'm going to see if we can put up on AmericaOutloud.com. It's kind of comprehensive. It's part of a training program that we offer. We can go to your school, we can go to your facility, and we do a threat assessment for outdoor activities, political rallies, graduations, whether high school, college, doesn't matter, any graduation ceremony, any type of an event like that. There are things that you can do to enhance your security. Now, let's take a minute and talk about this for a second. Is there a list of things that you can do that you can guarantee you do these five things and you will never have a problem at your school, your business, your outdoor event, anything? The answer to that is no. And anyone who tells you that they can give you a list of things to do or you can buy their products and you'll never have a problem is not being truthful, because the reality of these things is this. And this is hard for us to accept, but it's true. You know, active shooter incidents where these people pop up out of nowhere, the one thing that we can do is we can do threat assessments on people who are potentially dangerous. So this is something I'm pushing for a long time, and I wish the schools would get on board, okay? We do a threat assessment on a potentially dangerous student. So you find a kid who's written something, says something, does something, rumor about threats, and then you identify who that student is, and then you have a team of trained people in your school to go and address that student. Same thing in a business. You know, we all know that in the adult world, there's businesses where people say threatening things, they act in strange ways, and we don't want to get involved as adults as much as the kids don't want to get involved. So you can do an employee threat assessment. How dangerous or potentially dangerous is this person? What should we do with them based on what they're doing and saying? Should we call the police? Should we make a report? Is this an internal event? What is it we should do? This is how we stop the shooter before they come back and get us, by understanding the potential danger. So I'm pushing this out there. Student threat assessments, right? Employee threat assessments, as well as your physical facility threat assessments are what we can do to help us. All right, your outdoor stuff, you know, the reality is if somebody wants to get us, America is made up of soft targets. We are all soft targets everywhere we go. You know, you can go to the beach right now, and what do you see at the beach? 10,000 people laying on the sand, enjoying the sunshine and in the ocean breezes, and they're just laying there. Go to a concert, you know, an outdoor concert, a festival. Go to a garlic festival. Right, go to a tomato festival, go to a corn festival. We are all soft targets everywhere. Our schools, at least we can lock the door. We can do some things to keep people out. We can do some things to identify the people inside who may be a danger. What do we do at these outside events where people are going to show up to your place, announced or unannounced, to maybe do something? So this article that we put together is really it's an outline of the program that we offer. But I put it together as an article because it doesn't matter if you hire my company or not. I want you to be safe. So if you can take some of these things out of the article, bring them back to your school, bring them back to your college, bring them back to your concert hall and say, hey, are we doing these things? This might keep you safe. And I would be able to sleep much better at night knowing that somebody is paying attention. So it's assessing risk and creating a safety plan for outdoor events. That's the name of the article. All right, so basically the reality, it says, you know, the need for security at any large-scale public event like a high school football game, a musical concert, a graduation, or political rally must be a first consideration for any organizer. We live in a time when violence and chaos can and does strike without warning, placing people in danger of injury or death. Now, doesn't that say it all, really? Isn't that what happens when we put ourselves in these positions? You know, we don't expect it to happen, but it's possible that it can, because we live in a soft target world. So this is where awareness and preparing is what we do to help ourselves. If you're aware of your surroundings, if you see something, say something. That's probably one of the simplest things the authorities ever came up with to help us. If you see something that seems suspicious, say something. Don't just be quiet and walk away. All right, so those things actually really do work. So one of the things, I'm going to go through some of this list here and give you some of these tips, all right? This type of an assessment is really applicable to schools, colleges, summer camps, sports camps, anywhere people gather in large numbers, festivals, anything. Recently, we did a threat assessment on a huge summer camp filled with thousands of students. And, you know, these people were really on top of their game. They were like, hey, these kids are safe in school because people do the right thing. We need to do the right thing at our camp. We did an assessment, and they're making all kinds of changes to make things safer. So this kind of thing I'm going to talk about is really for that outdoor event where you need some guidelines. All right, so first thing you got to do is define the event and the stakeholders. What type of event is it? All right, is it a football game, a concert, a rally, graduation, or other type of gathering? Who's going to be involved? Who are your guests? Are they people in your community? Are they people from outside your community? Are they going to show up? Is there a rivalry? Is there a rivalry between your town and another town, and there's been violence in the past? All of these things seem common sense, but they're really important. They're really important to do. All right. Will there be dignitaries at your event? Will there be law enforcement? Do you have medical teams on standby? Do you have ambulances coming when they things? How about other facility employees? And what about the media? The media shows up. That draws people. You know, if you know the media is going to be there for the big game or for the graduation or the political rally. You know, who's going to be there? So you got to define those people. Next, you have to define several perimeters of activity at the event location, right? The larger area surrounding the event. You have to think about the community area around your event. Is it a rural area where there's woods around you, or are you in an urban environment where there's all kinds of neighborhood around you? What's the nature of the neighborhood? What kind of crime goes on in the neighborhood? What's the activities that go on in that? Or is it a suburban community where maybe you have residential mixed with some shopping or whatever? What goes on in those areas around the outer perimeter of your facility? You need to take a good look at that. All right, guest arrivals. You want to look at the guest arrival portals. Are you allowing in vehicular traffic, pedestrian foot traffic to the event, parking, ingress parking, barricades, transportation to the security screening area? Do you have a security screening area? Do you use anything for security screening? Or are you just basically, you know, checking, hey, any backpack that comes through, we're going to search with our little stick and we're going to look around in there. All right. How well trained are those people that are doing that? Are they volunteers or do you have professional people doing it? All right. Do you have any type of metal detectors? Are you using them? There's a great one that I saw recently. It's called ViewScan. Right, from the same people that make the Halo thing. They're really cutting edge, this company. It's IP Video Corporation out of New York. ViewScan is a passive ferrous metal detector. So it doesn't emit rays like a regular metal detector. So pregnant women can go through it, people with pacemakers, all kinds of stuff. And what it does is it detects any kind of a metal, and it shows you where on the body it sees it. And then you can, you know, hey, stop that person. Hey, come here, I need to talk to you and find out what they got on them. So do you use any metal detector? All right, any type of a metal detector. All right, the next thing you want to look at is the inner perimeter, where the event will actually take place. So you got your surrounding area, you got your outer perimeter, where you're going to have parking and where people are going to be screened, and then you have the inner perimeter, where the event actually takes place. So you need to define the resources needed to manage your logistics, your security, maintenance, food service, crowd control, entry screening, bag searches, and any medical resource staging areas. So these are all different things that you need to have, like a checklist, which of course True Security Design will provide to you if you were to hire us to do this. We do those kind of things. We try and help you set this up so you learn how to do it yourself, and you do it the next time on your own. All right? You need to then sit down and, as a team, put your team together. Hopefully it consists of local law enforcement, your event personnel, food service people. Everybody that's involved in this should have a representative on your committee. And you want to identify potential threats or safety security concerns, including but not limited to, you know, your active shooter, active terrors, protesters, weather, rival visitors, intoxicated people, power outages, or any potential danger to your gathering. Sit and, you know, do a tabletop over this. Who could potentially cause a problem to us? Why would they do it? Where would they come from? What's it all about? And try and, you know, then you can plan, because you can't just plan for everything. You got to think of things to plan for. And then you add on at the end the unthinkable. Then you tack that on at the end. All right, you want to create response protocols to match the resources for each potential concern that you have. Conduct a team-based tabletop drill for each potential threat and response by each group of your resources. Create an emergency action plan detailing all of the information you gather. Include established protocols, list all resource contact information, all that kind of stuff. Have everything written down so people can find it when they need it. Establish communication and notification protocols to include radios, land phones, and the interoperability equipment that we use. See, there we go. There's the fellas in the background barking there. Must be the mailman coming by to drop off the latest AmericaOutloud.com paperwork to me. All right, you want to establish communication and notification protocols to include radios, land phones, interoperability. We talked about that. Establish the leadership chain of command. Ensure that all involved parties understand that chain of command. Who do we go to if there's a problem? Designate crowd control escape locations. If there was a problem, how would you get people off the property or away to safety? Have you thought about that? Everybody just stampeding and running is really not a good idea. All right. So where are they going to go? Identify any and all cover and concealment areas. You know, cover is ballistic protection. You know, this kind of things. Where could people hide behind in case they were shooting? And concealment is simply being out of sight. Would they go under the bleachers? Would they go out to the woods? Is there a trail? Is there pathways? Is there a covered fencing? Or what do you have available to you to get people away from the main area should there be some kind of a problem that would provide them cover or concealment? All right, establish how announcements to the crowd will be made, including what if you had a potential PA failure, a power outage, or some other disruption of amplification or communication. Designate power generator locations. Do you have generators? Think about those things also. Designate an on-site and off-site medical triage locations with enough staffing for each. Include personnel, supplies, and vehicles. The reason you want to have two of them is if something happens, you know, out in the parking lot, you want to be able to bring the injured people into the inner perimeter, secure them, and take care of them. But what if something happens in the inner perimeter and people have to leave and they're injured? You need an off-site location, medical location, where you can take care of people. All right. Think about first responder staging area. Where would all the cops and the fire and the first aid people show up? What about a helicopter landing pad? You know, here in New Jersey, we have North Star, the state police. They come and show up and they can take people by helicopter to a hospital. Where would they land? Establish field security posts and ensure coordination and communications capability between the agencies. You know, do you have interoperability between all your different groups? You know, this was a problem during 9/11, and in many places, it has not been addressed properly. I found a great company out there. They're in North Carolina. They're called JPS Interoperability Solutions. They have no association with me other than they're really, really decent, nice people. But I can go to bed at night telling you about them. If you have various law enforcement people in your community and they can't talk to each other, what does everybody do? Go buy a whole new hundreds of thousands of dollar radio systems? No. You go to JPS Interoperability, and what they do is they have a device where you take one radio from each group that you have, and you plug it into this thing, and then all of a sudden they can all talk to each other. You could talk to a jet airplane in the air, and you could talk to somebody on a Dick's Sporting Goods walkie-talkie, as long as they're all part of this system. So this way, all your people can talk to you. So you buy one of these things, and when you have an event, you plug, everybody plugs in, and you can talk. Communication is key to life when we're doing these kind of things, all right? So establish that. Between sworn and private security, make sure they're involved. Are there adequate briefings to all security staff before and during the day of the event? Right? Have you gotten together and told everybody else what you figure out is a problem or you're concerned about? Or do they know what to look for? You want to establish those posts and make sure you talk to people. Coordinate with other location employees to ensure they understand the security patrol. So that's like the food service people, maybe the cleanup crew, the grounds crew. Make sure that everybody understands that's involved in this event, what they can do, where they can go, where the safety and security stuff is. All right. Establish an on-site and remote command center to coordinate activities throughout the event, planning for continuing operations in an emergency. So if you have your main staging place within the perimeter of the event and something happens, that's going to be a problematic situation. So you need to have an off-site command post, all right, so that they can take over and you can continue the emergency management of the situation if the people in the inner perimeter are somehow or other involved or they had to abandon their post or get out of there because of the attack, all right? Utilize a checklist to ensure all of these plans are covered and taken care of. So the checklist is important to keep us online. Establish a debriefing date to understand any lessons learned. And finally, okay, make sure you involve the local police, if you have Homeland Security near you, any of these groups. Get them into the table. Have them sit down and say, hey, here's the event we're having. Do you have any information that could help us? Is there any threats out there we should be concerned about? Have everyone who has a stake in this at the table to help you have a successful outdoor event. So basically, by planning ahead, including all stakeholders in the process, anticipating the threats and developing realistic responses to the threats, then conduct a real life or drill or a tabletop or whatever you can do to see how this would actually go. This is how you can have a safer outdoor event. In the light of all the outdoor events that have been attacked in the past couple of weeks and months, this is an important thing for everyone to concern themselves with. You never know where this is going to happen. Are you prepared? Did you do anything to try and help your community survive them? All right? Well, listen, I got to go now. I'm going to pray for our country. You pray for our country. Thank you for listening. And, you know, hey, if you need to get a dog, get a rescue dog. These dogs are loud and they bark a lot, but they're really wonderful, wonderful animals, and they need homes. Be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem, people. I'll talk to you next week here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.